stay tuned for the Sunday morning wake-up call on 94.7 WPVC-LP Charlottesville. The wake-up call is brought to you by Tiger Fuel and the markets of Tiger Fuel. Now here's your host, Rick Moore.
And Sunday morning wake-up call. Possibly talking about homegrown after homegrown, as my guest pointed out. Here today to talk about medical cannabis. I keep wanting to say medical marijuana, but as we'll find out during the hour, talking about medical cannabis with patients at a time and one of those microphones that doesn't want to sit in place with Al Byrne and Mary Lynn Mathry. Al Byrne, founding member and board member emeritus of Patients at a Time and a Navy veteran. Mary Lynn Mathry, president and co-founder of Patients at a Time, president and founding member of the American Cannabis Nurses Association as well, and a Navy nurse vet. Good morning.
Good morning.
Hi. Thank
you so much for being with me today. And while I made a little joke about that, thank you, Mary Lynn, for tossing that my way. We are here to talk about a serious topic and one that gets overlooked all too often. Medical cannabis with your organization, Patients at a Time. Now, you live in Albemarle County, but this is a national organization that people sort of, I'm going to say they overlook because it's become an ever-growing topic, right? But Patients at a Time is a national organization.
Correct. And actually, we're in Nelson County.
So you've moved over the side a little bit?
Always there.
Yeah,
always
the little there. Town Howardsville, it's a funny little town. It's in three counties, Albemarle, Buckingham, and Nelson County.
Ah. So I had the zip code. So I knew Howardsville, but I didn't realize which part of Howardsville
right.
you were in.
Right.
We're close to Albemarle County, as you can probably
know. Ah. But Patients at a Time... formed here in Little Nelson County and a national organization.
Correct. Patients at a Time, it's a 501c3 educational charity formed in 1995 by Al and I, literally to educate healthcare professionals and the public about the endogenous cannabinoid system and the therapeutic use of cannabis, medical marijuana, as most people like to call it.
Medical marijuana.
Well, that's incorrect, of course. The marijuana is a slang word that was developed to denigrate Mexican Americans back in the day here, and we're talking in the 30s or so. The plant is called cannabis, and the plant, cannabis, is a plant. It is not a drug. But let us start off the conversation about this plant the way it should be. You can make drugs from a plant, so you can make a drug from a cannabis plant, but it's a plant. You see, it grows in the ground, needs the sun and water and things like that. It's also been defined as an herb by the American Herbal Association. They did that in 2014, and they produced a monologue on the cannabis plant, which dealt specifically with how to grow it, how to make it a good, useful medical plant. And we're expecting a second part of that monologue to come out, which will actually advise how that herb can be used medically. So, again, I don't mean to interrupt Mary Lynn. I want her to go on. But I want the audience to understand, when we formed Patients at a Time in 1995, there was no conversation, Rick, about medical cannabis or medical marijuana. It didn't exist. I'll take credit with Mary Lynn and the people we worked with at Patients at a Time for starting that conversation. And now it is out of our control, and that's good.
Yeah, actually, we started in 1995, that was before any of the states. You know, 1996, California recognized, they're calling it medical marijuana, but access for patients. And fast forward to today, and we now have 29 states with medical cannabis laws, and about a dozen more with CBD laws. We can explain that as well. That's just one of the another major cannabinoid in the plant that is not intoxicating and has been found to be good for seizure control, among other things. So a lot of state legislators, Virginia included, passed laws that were saying if it's CBD-rich, cannabidiol-rich cannabis, low in THC, very low in THC, the cannabinoid that has the intoxicating effects, in Virginia, patients will be able to use it for intractable seizures only. So very, very narrow use in Virginia. So anyway, we've got 29 states with medical cannabis laws, over a dozen with CBD laws, and the federal government maintains it still stays in Schedule One, the forbidden category.
Because it has no medical value. So all of the states are wrong. All of the people that have studied this issue that made the decision that their state laws should have medical cannabis as an option are wrong. There are 27 countries in the world that use cannabis. I find our American attitude very ethnocentric. Let me throw a big word out there. What it means is if it isn't a U.S. Developed piece of science or research, it is worthless or not to be considered, which is, of course, totally ridiculous. But again, there's 27 countries in the world that have used cannabis medically for a number of years, including, you know, backward places like Canada and the United Kingdom and Spain. Then we have Merck. Merck is the fourth largest pharmaceutical company in the world. And Merck is the distributor of cannabis in those 27 countries all through Europe and other places. So while the rest of the world progresses, Virginia and the United States regresses. It's a shameful display of ethnocentric behavior. It shows, especially here in Virginia, where we're sitting here in Charlottesville, University of Virginia, Thomas Jefferson, all that history of idealism and taking care of people and having an open mind. These people in Richmond certainly don't live to the Jefferson ideal when it comes to medical cannabis. So it's a problem here locally in Virginia on many, many levels. But the big level that it's on is by not having the option of medical cannabis to be used under the discretion and under the judgment of a healthcare professional, people die. I mean, that's the trade. We're gonna have people die rather than have them use an herb under the direction and judgment of a trained physician. Now, I like to point out on my radio show, which I do, and we'll get to these radio shows, but these laws here in Virginia, these people that are sitting there in Richmond making up these laws about medical cannabis do not have nursing degrees. They're not pharmacists. They didn't go to medical school. They went to law school. They went to police school. They don't know a damn thing about medical cannabis or medicine. So I have a saying, and I'd like the listeners to just take it in a little bit. I say, consider the source. What's the source of these judgments that are being made in Richmond? Who's making them? I look at these judgments on medical cannabis made in Richmond and other states and at the federal level as people practicing medicine without a license. They're not doctors. They license doctors to do this work. They are not doctors. So they're practicing medicine without a license, and then we can get into the whole abdication of the medical profession as a whole to have given that authority away to doctors, not to doctors, but to lawyers and cops. Go ahead, I'm sorry.
Well, again, this is Sunday Morning Wake Up Call. We're talking with Marilyn Mathry and Al Byrne from Patients Out of Time about medical cannabis. I'm curious. Now, Marilyn, you're a registered nurse, as well as from Patients Out of Time, president and founding member of American Cannabis Nurses Association. You said that Patients Out of Time was started, and I'm going to paraphrase here, but it was started to educate
health
professionals. Not for the public.
And public, healthcare professionals and the public. It literally, that's our goal, educate anybody and everybody.
Yeah, the mission statement was to we prioritize the education of healthcare professionals, but we'd also involve the general public. We wanted the general public to have the information as well.
But was, so let me back up a second. But my thought was the goal was to start by saying, hey, everybody, hey, healthcare professionals, hey, doctors and nurses, let's make you a little more knowledgeable on what we can do. Not, hey, guy down the street, let's change your vote in the poll.
Oh, no. We're apolitical. Totally apolitical.
Yeah, it was primarily educational because, frankly, it seems like if a healthcare professional understands, and we'll talk a little bit about the endocannabinoid system, but understands our human body and the cannabis plant that is older than humans. It's been on the planet way millions of years before humans came about. If they understood this and the value it has, they would fight to make sure patients have it. They would talk to legislators and get those laws changed. So our whole goal of education, I mean, literally is to change it because we are, when we say patients out of time, we really mean it. Veterans are a great example with post-traumatic stress. And frankly, it's not always the post-traumatic stress symptoms that veterans commit suicide from. Most of the time, it's the medications prescribed to them. When a vet suffers from that, usually they've got pain, so they're given an opiate or some pain medication. Depressed, so they're put on an antidepressant. They get something for their anxiety, a little Valium or Ativan for anxiety, something for their sleep. This cocktail of drugs literally makes them go crazy. In fact, the antidepressants on the label, if anyone who gets these antidepressants, who's put on Prozac and other drugs like that, there's a black box warning on the label, on the insert for the drugs that will say may cause suicidal or homicidal ideation. And that risk factor is highest among young people, like 18 to 20 some years old. So not knowing what to do, modern medicine, the best they do is start giving these different pills to the vets, and the vets say, well, it's not helping. They usually up the dose, add another drug, and the next thing you know, the veteran has either killed himself or put himself in a position where he's going to be shot and killed by a police officer or something. Literally, you know, death by suicide. I mean, death by cop, suicide by cop, however you call
it. Right, let somebody, you put yourself in a situation because you won't pull the trigger, you let somebody else do it for you.
And it's similar to
what... Is that what you mean
exactly,
by that?
Yes, and it's similar to what we're seeing with the football players and that who've been hit in the head year after year with...
CMT, CET?
CTE, chronic traumatic encephalopathy. They've been hit in the head so many times. That's caused problems and they're not the same. And they have either been violent or, I mean, they just can't handle the way they're living, and a lot of the football players have committed suicide.
Well, Marilyn's kind of wandering here, but to go back to Patients Out of Time, you're absolutely correct. I mean, we formed Patients Out of Time before this conversation was being held in the medical community. And we gathered together from around the world at that time the best science and researchers we could find, put them together, actually at the University of Iowa, in Iowa City. Our first conference was in the year 2000. And since that time, we have continued to do that. We brought experts from around the world to a central location. We listened to their talks. This was peer-reviewed science that they were presenting to their peers. Since 2006, we have also made it a practice of videotaping all of these presentations, which, by the way, are and were accredited. That means that when a professor and a nurses and all got together at one of our conferences, those people in attendance could apply and get their CMEs if they were doctors, CEUs, and so they are the healthcare professionals. This information that we were putting out as Patients Out of Time and Forum was accredited by the American Medical Association and the American Nurses Association. Still is. So this is not voodoo. This is real science from around the world. Again, we're not ethnocentric. We bring people from everywhere that know what they're doing. And we present them in public. We videotape them. And if anybody in the world that wants to take an accredited course about medical cannabis use can do so online and has been able to now for three or four years, the address would be the W's. And then the Medical Cannabis MedicalCannabisInstitute.org. The MedicalCannabisInstitute.org online, you can get, you have to pay, but the price is very reasonable. It's accredited courses for healthcare professionals, medical professionals, everybody that wants to take the course. And it's right there now. And when we started in 1995, none of this was there. And it, well, we're going to get to veterans in a minute. That's sort of my specialty. But we've done the same thing with the veterans organizations and the veteran community. 11 years ago, I started with Mary Lynn and another veteran, another organization which you didn't list in the credit. It's called Veterans for Medical Cannabis Access. And it's been a very, very successful organization because Mary Lynn and Mike and I and the others had the same goal with veterans that we have with Patients Out of Time. Start the conversation. This was 11 years ago we started this organization. There was no conversation about suicides and opiates and veterans. They were just there, and they were hurting. Now they're not just there. And there's another reason for that, too, and it goes back to the Vietnam War, and I can explain that if you'd like. But the point here is that with the veterans now, it's not 22 a day, as Mary Lynn says. It's not even close. With veterans, it's probably in the range of 50 to 60 to 70.
What has changed this, though? I mean, is it just Patients Out of Time? Is it?
It's a pyramid, Rick. We built a pyramid. The conversation started with these conversations, especially the public ones at the universities in the year 2000, and we educated people, and those people went and educated other people. It's the snowball, and now they're everywhere. The education that goes on. I mean, we even got to Dr. Gupta on TV a couple of years ago.
That's a biggie. Sanjay Gupta, the CNN doc, He's a neurologist and for many years, a neurosurgeon, for many years would say, no, it's bad, and he'd tell patients never to use it. And he finally looked at the evidence. And he came on in 2010 or sometime a while back. He had the first show, titled it Weed. but that's the show that he featured. He was amazed. He's basically saying, hey, I looked at the science, and I realized I was duped by the federal government all these years.
Word, duped.
That I was told that it's a Schedule 1, meaning no medical value, highly addictive, not safe for use to fit in Schedule 1. He said, that's not true about cannabis. And what he featured, one of the patients that he featured there was a little 6-year-old girl, a twin, and she had what's called Dravet syndrome, which is intractable seizures. And this little girl has like 100 seizures a day. I mean, she was a twin, so her twin sister's a normal, developed little 6-year-old, and this girl could not walk or talk. Was seizing all through the day, and literally they would have to revive her every once in a while. I mean, she went into cardiac arrest more than
100
one occasion.
100 seizures a day is one every 15 minutes.
There you
can't.
Go.
It just keeps going. It was ridiculous.
Stops.
And this happens. That's why this law in Virginia, it's for kids that have that terrible kind of seizure that modern medicine has not been able to control. Anyway, so they feature this girl, and she got to try some high CBD cannabis. It was an oil, wasn't smoking it. Everybody always thinks you have to smoke the medicine, and you don't. But she took the oil, and literally, mom and dad watched her, and no seizures that day.
Well, the camera
watched
her, too.
And the camera, no seizures the next day. Within a week, she had like one seizure. So this was like, and the parents are going, I mean, she's been put on these horrific medications. Why didn't somebody tell us about this sooner? These medications cause harm. Literally, the meds can kill you and or do permanent body damage. So that went viral. And that's why all these states passed the CBD laws. They were thinking they're being responsible.
And you can find his video, because now there's like Weed 1 or Weed 2 and 3. And you can find them on YouTube.
Yeah, of course, We object to the title, but yeah, they're there.
let's take our first break. Again, our guest today, as we talk about medical cannabis and their organization, Patients Out of Time, Mary Lynn Mathry and Al Byrne, the founding members. Hang tight. And we'll open up the phone lines, by the way. Get your fingers ready. You're welcome to call in if you'd like. You have questions or comments, 434-284-9470. We will open up the phone lines today if you're interested, 434-284-9470. All right, back in action here on Sunday Morning Wake Up Call. a nice October day. Thanks so much for being with us. And again, if you have questions, you want to talk about medical cannabis, we've got two experts with us, Al Byrne, founding member, and a Navy vet who works with veterans of all types. And I can't think of what word you used.
It's veterans.
All experiences of any time they
were. Any conflict. Any conflict, any age, any gender. To a veteran like myself, and Mary Lynn, by the way, is also a Navy veteran. To us, a veteran is a veteran is a veteran. We're all the same, and we all care about each other. So I did my tour in the Navy was 24 years long, and I am a Vietnam vet. And Mary Lynn's was about six, and she served in several locations overseas to Puerto Rico, actually, as a Navy nurse, which is where we met. We were both on active duty in the Navy in Puerto Rico at one time.
And Mary Lynn Mathry from Patients Out of Time and also American Cannabis Nurses Association. So if you got a call, now's the time to make it. I know we don't open up the phone lines much anymore, but today could be the day for you to take advantage of it. Folks, I got a question for you. So you're doing all this teaching to healthcare professionals. Are the medical schools doing any teaching to healthcare professionals?
Good question.
Yeah, great question. We sure wish you would think so. Temple University is in
Philadelphia. We know Temple University in Philadelphia offers a course, and Mary Lynn will talk to the endocannabinoid system and medical cannabis applications. I also believe that the University of Vermont's medical school now offers a course. But our understanding is that there is 157 or maybe now 58 medical schools in the country. So we're really talking about none. I mean, with just two. I will add to
two schools and two classes.
Well,
and they make them go at night in their invisible cloaks.
Yeah, probably something like that.
I would like to add that Washington State University is probably a leader in this right now. They have a brand new medical school, and when a medical student shows up as a freshman, they will be totally indoctrinated in the endocannabinoid system and medical cannabis, and as it will their nursing school. As I understand it, Washington State University's nursing school, led by a great doctor, Matt Layton, will also be the first school to offer these courses to folks that want to be registered nurses. So, yeah, it's a shame. It was a great question. And this gets to my point that I tried to make a few minutes ago about the healthcare community, especially the medical doctors of this country, having abdicated their responsibility to law enforcement and to lawyers in this regard. They should be ashamed of themselves. I hope they are. In a way, is a heck of a dichotomy there. As I said earlier, the American Medical Association and American Nurses Association accredit the work that we do in education, but they don't do it themselves. Why not?
What?
And the nurses, what has it been? It's been since 1994. Or 2000, someplace back there, that the American Nurses Association 15 years ago issued a white paper that said every nurse in America should become educated about the uses of medical cannabis.
Yeah, some state nurses associations, Virginia being the first, we got to pass a resolution for that. And the ANA did come forward in 2003 and then has since put position papers.
And think about it, but you got, even if it was illegal, and it was for years and years and years, people used it. And if the government and the healthcare professionals thought that this was a health problem, why didn't they educate their nurses and doctors about it being a health problem?
Well, that is the problem. What we've got is we're all learning about marijuana when you study drugs of abuse. And we've grown up in school with the DARE programs. Many kids have. Al and I are too old for the DARE program. But nowadays, they've grown up with the DARE program. In college, you learn about it is substance abuse. What they need to teach, and that is the crime, is this new science, besides teaching about cannabis, the fact that so many people are using it. But there is new science now that there's a whole molecular signaling system in the human body called the endogenous, or endo for short, endocannabinoid system. Most listeners probably have heard of endorphins, morphine-like chemicals we make as we need them. And they used to say the runner's high was endorphins kicking in. Well, we now know that a runner's high is your endocannabinoids kicking in, making you feel better. But what they discovered back in 1988 was we have receptors in our brain for chemicals that look like cannabinoids, a group of chemicals called cannabinoids.
Compounds.
Those chemicals, compounds, are what are found in the cannabis plant. That's what kind of makes it unique to other plants. It's got these cannabinoids, over 100 different cannabinoids in the plant, THC being the one we've all learned about, studied about. That's the one that makes people, gives the high in the cannabis. There are other cannabinoids, CBD being one of them. But you've got, so we've got the receptors in our brain, and the scientists knew it wasn't for the outside plant. There must be something in the body. So 4 years later, 1992, they discovered that we make a cannabinoid. And the first one that they discovered, they called anandamide, which means bliss in Sanskrit. The Israeli researchers found it. So now we know we've got a receptors, and we've got a cannabinoid that we make, an endogenous cannabinoid that interacts in that receptor. Fast forward a few more years, they learned we have other receptors. The first ones they found in the brain, and they called them CB1, the first cannabinoid receptors found. Then they found another group of receptors in the immune system, within our leukocytes, in the spleen, in our tonsils. And they found another endocannabinoid, and it's got a long name. Short name is 2AG. So what we know now is throughout our body, on the cellular level, so it's smaller than you can see, we make these chemicals, and they're made on demand, and the whole purpose is to keep you in balance. So when you're stressed with crappy food, they come in there to help make sure everything can get rid of the bad stuff of the food, utilize what it can of the good food. Bacteria, it's going to boost the immune system and make sure you can fight the bacteria. Cancer cells. Our endocannabinoid system identifies cancer cells and says, that's a bad cell, and literally starts a chemical reaction to make the cell commit suicide. So in healthy people, we are always, our endocannabinoid system is active, and it's killing bad cells, making sure they die off, and protecting the healthy cells. It's fantastic. It's anti-inflammatory. It's neuroprotectant. It takes care of pain. It helps bones stay stable for osteoporosis. It is an amazing system, and I think that's, for both of us, the shock of why it's not being taught yet, because it teaches everyone why cannabis is useful for so many different things.
Let me just interrupt to say, folks, this endocannabinoid system is the boss. It runs the immune system. It runs your pulmonary system. It runs all the systems. So if your endocannabinoid system is not up to par, if it's not running at full speed, likely other systems will begin to break down, and that's how we get cancers and things like this. A good friend of ours, a Dr. Ethan Russo, he's a remarkable man and a remarkable researcher in this area of cannabis, a number of years ago wrote a very, very well-received article. And basically his thesis, which has proven to be pretty much true, is that when we get ill, we might be very well experiencing an endocannabinoid deficiency. In other words, our endocannabinoid system isn't running at 100% for whatever reason. So by taking an additive to that system, in that you take the exact same compound into your body via the herb cannabis, that extra added addition to your system boosts the endocannabinoid system back to 100%, which will then work to boost everything else to 100%. I also want to point out about this endocannabinoid system, as Mary Lynn she describes it really well, but I'm a layman. And what I think is incredible about this system is it is in every living creature except insects. Think about that. It's not only in our human body. It's in your dog and your horse. It's in the sea sponges, the snake, and the American eagle. It's everywhere. Everything on Earth except an insect has an endocannabinoid system, and our medical community doesn't know about it. It's staggeringly stupid.
See, but that's the point. By the way, we're talking about medical cannabis with our guests today, Al Byrne and Marilyn Mathry from Patients at a Time, a national organization founded in Howardsville, Nelson County. You say that medical community doesn't know about it, but don't you think that they do know about it and that the federal government is the organization that's not letting them tell anybody about it? You're shaking your head. No.
You're scared.
Even in the states like California, you'd be surprised at how many healthcare professionals have never heard of the endocannabinoid system. And when they first found the receptors in our brain in 88, it got a blip on the news, and that was it. You know, by the time they had the system, if it was anything and somehow not related to cannabis or marijuana at all, you know, it would have been everywhere, on Oprah Winfrey, on 2020, on 48 Hours, on 60 Minutes. Everybody would have just been, because it's so amazing. But it's like the news just kind of goes away. Clearly, healthcare professionals are not taught about it.
The other thing, too, is I do this weekly TV show called Veterans Voices. I'd like you veterans to really tune into this thing. But I just interviewed an author, Steve Johnson. He's a PhD RN, and Steve has written a book, which is Cannabis for Chronic Pain Relief. And when I was talking to Steve about this, he's a Florida guy, and I was talking to him, and he kept saying over and over again about this question you have, Rick, about why don't these healthcare professionals get up to gear on this thing? It should by now. And his answer was true, I think. He said, they're just scared, Al. And I said, what do you mean? What are they scared of? He said, the federal government. He said, these guys, if they start messing around with a Schedule I drug, cannabis is still a Schedule I drug, which means it's prohibited. Nobody can use it, essentially. And they start using it based under state law, they're afraid the feds will come down and put them in jail, and it's not worth it to them. These doctors and nurses and people, they have families, they have kids, they have dogs, and they're worried about not going to jail just like everybody else.
Their licenses.
So they're scared. So your federal government, the answer to the question is, it's the feds.
Yeah. I mean, it is the intimidation. The license to practice is your, you know, that's their livelihood, and they worked hard to get it. And the fact that it is a Schedule I drug under federal law, even if the state says it's okay, that's why in all the states, patients are only given recommendations. A physician cannot write a prescription because he can't prescribe a Schedule I drug. But they're very intimidated because you're messing around with that, the DEA is coming. And the DEA, under federal law, they don't care either too much about state law. they're very intimidating. The other very sad part is in the states where it's legal, most hospitals won't allow patients to bring it in with them. So you've got a sick little kid with a seizure disorder, and the cannabis has been controlling it, and something goes wrong, the seizures could still get out of control, or something else happens, the child has to go into the hospital.
Right. You're not supposed to bring your outside drugs into the hospital.
And it's like, now
go back
what do
in
we do?
And have 100 seizures a day.
You know, and right. So now what do we do? Uh-oh, now they got to go back to the other drugs. It's a terrible thing, and parents are just really suffering a lot. I mean, some parents have literally uprooted themselves from whatever state they live in to move to a state where they can access that medicine.
A lot of parents.
And some have done it. Same thing.
We call them internal refugees in our country.
Yeah.
Where to save their kids' lives, they got to move to Washington State or Colorado from wherever they live. It's crazy.
And they've had kids, parents who decided they want to try it for cancer. And they've literally been threatened to have the children taken from their home because the healthcare professionals are saying, no, we think the chemotherapy they should use. And the parents are saying, well, we want to try this. And there have been cases literally of taking children away from the family to say, no, they're going to be treated under the standard care.
Marilyn, I'd like to shift to veterans, if I could. I know we got some time left, but there might be a caller out there that wants to know about our veterans. I hope there is.
Let me throw the number out there again. You know, we don't take calls very, very often on this program anymore. 434-284-9470. But if there are veterans out there, family of veterans, questions about the program, about the topic, we've got the folks here to give you some information to answer the question. This is about medical cannabis. 434-284-9470. Give us a call. That's what we're here for today. Marilyn Mathry and Al Byrne from Patients Out of Time. You can go to their website, medicalcannabis.com. Do a lot of reading. But we have them at the other end of the phone today. So, Al?
Well, there's another organization that we're actually representing here today, too. And again, it's called Veterans for Medical Cannabis Access. And that's the organization I referred to a little while back that we formed 11 years ago to begin the conversation with veterans and cannabis. And it's been very, very successful. Just pick up the paper or look on the news and you'll see something about veterans and cannabis going on. It's all over the place. So, again, we were successful there. But Marilyn's point about the endocannabinoid system was a blip on the radar of the U.S. press and the U.S. public is true. But here's another blip. Veterans for Medical Cannabis Access was formed 11 years ago. 8 years ago, after working with the Veterans Health Administration for those 3 years, the Veterans Health Administration in July of the year 2010 issued a directive. And the directive said, it was very short, but it said essentially two things that I think your audience would be interested in. First of all, it made it very clear. This was the Veterans Health Administration of the United States government. This is the largest health organization in the world. This is the health organization of a country who has cannabis in Schedule 1, which says it's not a medicine. In this directive, the Veterans Health Administration said very clearly in one sentence, cannabis shall be treated as a medicine by all VHA personnel. They further went on to say that if a veteran had jumped through all the hoops of his or her state to get a become a registered or a legal, whatever, cannabis patient, that they could use their cannabis, and that cannabis could be integrated into the VHA medical protocol of that patient. The only caveat there was, again, as we just talked about the hospitals, because the federal government owns the VA properties, a veteran is not allowed to bring his or her medicine onto the grounds. But again, hear what I said. In 2010, the United States government's health organization said cannabis is a medicine. How can the health organization say it's a medicine and our government still keep it in Schedule 1? Here's the answer. The people in Congress are cops and lawyers. They don't know. And they obviously can't read. Now, the other thing about a blip that I find really interesting, when Veterans for Medical Cannabis Access.org, by the way, when you look us up, when that announcement was made, we were contacted by the New York Times. That's a pretty big paper, I think. And the New York Times put this information on the top half of the front page the next day. No paper in the United States repeated that story. Not one. Not one. And they never have since. How did that go down? So here's the deal with the veterans. I'm a veteran. I live in two states, Florida and Virginia. If I go into the VA here in Virginia and I say to them, I'm sick, I need some help, but I'm also, I want you to know that I use cannabis virtually every day for pain and for post-traumatic stress, they say, well, we're not going to treat you here. You have to go home and come back again when you don't have any cannabis in your system. Now, if I was a veteran and I lived in Maine and I have the same story and the same situation, the VA hospital in Maine would say, thank you for your service. Come on in. Let's help you out. So what we have here is a system developed by our country and our Veterans Health Administration. And I'm not knocking the VHA here. They have done everything they possibly can. But what we have here is a system of treatment for veterans with cannabis that I call medical treatment by geography. Think about what I'm saying. I'm a veteran. If I live in Maine, I can use cannabis and be treated well. If I live in Virginia, I can't be treated by the VHA at all. Not because my symptoms are any better or worse, not because I'm not a veteran. It's because I live in Virginia. That's right. Immoral, that's illogical, and that's medically unethical.
All right. Al, I want to come back and talk more about vets because I know that you're, I know that you are a vet, and that's crucial. Caller, are you with us?
Yes.
Can you hang 30 seconds while I take my break?
Sure.
I appreciate you letting Al finish, and we will be right back with you. And thanks for being with us today on Sunday Morning Wake Up Call. We are taking calls 434-284-9470. And we have a caller with us. Caller, thank you so much for being with us. What's your name?
Steve.
Steve. And I understand you're a veteran.
I am. Excuse me. I'm a Vietnam vet. I live in Virginia, actually in the local area. And I was just wondering, have you noticed any progress in the state legislature to, you know, get medical marijuana approved in Virginia? Now, I know in 72 they had a dispensary in Hampton or Newport News at one point. And then, of course, that was 72, enough said.
Yeah.
Do you foresee any, I mean, do you know of any progress or people champions for veterans trying to get at least medical marijuana?
All right, Steve.
Through the state?
Steve, is that your only question? Otherwise, I'm going to let you hang up and listen to the answer on the air, okay?
I will. Thank you.
All right, thanks for the call.
Well, Steve, I don't know about the dispensary, but back in 1971-2, in that era, Virginia did pass a medical cannabis law that was quite positive for the time. It was limited, though, in a way. It had two maladies that could be treated by a doctor or healthcare professional. And that was glaucoma, which is an intraocular eye pressure problem, and the bad effects, the sickness effects that come from chemotherapy. But it was a very simple law, and it's one I like, and I'm glad you asked the question. We have seen limited advancement in Virginia on the whole medical cannabis issue. I think that the stumbling block is a committee there that, again, is made up completely of lawyers and cops, and I can't remember the name of it, something about the Judicial Committee or something. We've testified in front of it many times. They not only wish to remain ignorant, they're also rude. There's been very little progress. Now, the interesting thing about the law that is in effect, it has never been rescinded, that 1970 law, it just says that the glaucoma and the chemotherapy sickness can be treated by a physician based on that physician's own judgment.
With cannabis.
With cannabis. And so what we want the federal government, the Virginia legislature to do is just to remove those two problems, glaucoma and the chemotherapy sickness, and just say that people in Virginia, that are citizens of Virginia, can be treated by their physician based upon the physician's own judgment, which is, after all, what physicians do in every other case, medical case, in this country. There are over 500,000 pharmaceutical drugs available to you and I, Steve, and they all get issued to us one way or the other through the VA to our brothers and sisters. We could simplify the whole deal by just allowing cannabis as an option and allowing doctors and nurses to actually do their job. Are the Virginia legislators up to that right now? No. No, they're... I don't know what to call them. I have a problem with people that wish to remain stupid. And the information is certainly available to these legislators. I'm available. Mary Lynn's available. There are researchers and scientists all over the world and country that will be glad to talk to them and tell them they're making a huge mistake. And while they do, Virginians die every day from opiate overdose and suicide that don't have to. In the states where it's legal, and a veteran can go into the VA hospital and get treated, or anywhere, and use cannabis, the results have been, I think the results are what Marilyn and I figured they'd be. Suicides are down 25, 33%. DUIs are down. Violent behavior.
Domestic violence is down.
Everything's down. The only, in Colorado, as I understand it, the only law-breaking enterprise that has remained the same is breaking and entering. But anything at all with violence is greatly reduced. Hospital visits down. Let alone the state's making, a couple of $1 billion a year now taxing this beautiful plant. And as we understand what it can do medically, we're also going to begin to understand, we know, Mary Lynn wrote a book in 1997 that has a whole chapter on the nutrition of cannabis. It is superfood. It's superfood. And let's get this over with right now. There's two words you need to understand, psychotropic and psychoactive. The cannabis plant has compounds that are psychotropic. That means it will transfer through the blood-brain barrier. Nothing else will do that, really. The cannabis compounds can do that, basically, because we make them. But the other thing we have to understand is you don't get any euphoria. Mary Lynn used the word intoxication. I don't like that. And high. I don't like that. I like the fact that cannabis relaxes people. It gives them a feeling of bliss or security. But you only get that feeling from cannabis, that high, if you want to use that slang, when you ignite it, when you burn it. If you eat the cannabis plant, the seeds, the oil, the leaf itself, there is no psychoactive happening. It is just great, great nutrition.
So if you give the cannabis oil to the 6-year-old suffering from seizures, she's not getting high at the same time?
Oh, not at all.
No, isn't that the concern of the general public? By the way, the phone line is open for somebody who wants to follow Steve. 434-284-9470. 47 after the hour, 48. Only a few minutes left if you want to take advantage of Al Byrne and Marilyn Mathry from Patients Out of Time. But that's got to be the concern of the general public and the legislators who aren't reading the material and tune you out when you sit down in the chair across from them. I don't want my kid or the kid of the person who's in the hospital. I don't want them getting high just because it makes them feel better.
Right. And that, you know, Al's exactly right. High or intoxicating even is a funny word because you think drunk or you think drugged out somehow. High, the best way to explain it is by the runner's high. And when runners explain it, they say, God, I feel great. I feel so alive. I feel joy. Everything's running smoothly. And that generally is the high of cannabis, a THC high. Now, with the seizure disorder and that, when we said it's high, a CBD-rich cannabis, high in cannabidiol, one of the many cannabinoids, these other ones, as Al said, they might be psychotropic. They might affect the brain, but they're not causing that joy feeling, the high.
Psychoactive.
So for most of the medicines for kids and even for adults these days, what with our education from Patients Out of Time and the studies that are coming around, we've literally been trying to tell growers, stop growing this super high THC cannabis. It needs to be a balanced plant like it used to be. Bring back CBD into the plant and other things. When CBD is in a plant with THC, it actually dampens down the high from the THC. So if the plant had 10% THC and no CBD, someone would get really
relaxed.
Relaxed. and to an extent, maybe stoned, a little too relaxed. But if you have CBD in there with it, it will dampen that down and it won't be like a 10% THC, a strong cannabis plant. So the medicine itself can be so titrated, not to give a high per se, but again, it's usually a joy feeling. It's sad that many dying patients, especially the elderly, it's like, well, I don't want to get high, but let me try it. So we'll try, you try to offer them cannabis that's not going to have them feel that way, but add a little bit more THC as they go along so that they can recognize, oh, I'm just feeling better. I'm feeling good. It's
give
okay.
Give them morphine. I mean, I don't understand what the problem is with giving them.
Exactly. Exactly. And the difference there is, for the most part, the more they take the morphine, the more they feel drugged. They literally will say that. I feel drugged. I can't think straight. My head's not clear.
And when you come off of it, you go into a
Let me go.
Not that I've taken any, by the way.
Let me go one place here that we need to go. How safe is cannabis? Incredibly safe. Here's why. Go back to Mary Lynn's conversation earlier about the receptors in the brain. Not only is the endocannabinoid system in all living creatures except insects, these receptors are everywhere in your body. They're in the brain. They're in the skeletal system. They're in your skin. They're in your liver. They're in your heart. They're everywhere except one place in your body, and that's your brainstem. And because there's no receptors in your brainstem, there's no way for the endocannabinoid system to affect your brainstem. So even if you get to what Mary Lynn is saying, into an overdose state of cannabis use, and I have experienced that. I'm a very experienced cannabis user, but twice in my experience, I've been quite in an overdose situation, and I didn't feel very good. I was dizzy. I wanted to lay down. I felt like I needed to go to sleep, and I did. And when I woke up a couple hours later, I was fine, but I didn't die. And I'll never die from the use of cannabis in any situation. And again, it's because of the receptors. Before we leave, I'd like to put out a couple of different web pages and things, if I could. Rick, is that all right?
That's fine. And we'll also put those on the podcast.
Oh, thank you. All right. Well, I want to repeat again, medicalcannabis.com, patientsoutoftime.org. I'd like to repeat again our veterans organization, which is veteransformedicalcannabisaccess.org. The easy way to access that on the internet is just say vmca.org. And the final address is an internet address for iHeartRadio Network, which we have programs on. Patients Out of Time has a program, as does us as veterans, the VCMA. It's called Veterans Voices. It's at www.timeforhemp.com. That four is the number four. Timeforhemp.com, Veterans Voices. This is on every week, and myself and a co-host interview veterans of all conflicts about their military experiences and what happened to them. Most of these veterans that come on our program, both men and women, have been hurt in their service, some in combat, some not. The injuries are both physical and emotional, and they come on week after week after week after week. Hundreds of them have come on these shows and told us the same thing. I came back hurt. I went to the doctor. I went to the VA doctor. I went to the private doctor. They loaded me up with drugs. I became a zombie. I lost my husband. My kids don't love me. My dog doesn't even come near me, and I lost my job. And a vet will come along, an old buddy, and say, gee, just try cannabis. And they do, because they're at the end. And they try cannabis, and we say on the radio show, so what happened? My dog loves me. I got my job back. I'm not a zombie, and all I take is cannabis, and I'm off of these, as Mary Lynn says, this pharmacopoeia, cornucopia they give these people. And it's amazing to listen to. I don't care who you listen to. Pick one. We have Governor Jesse Ventura. He's a Vietnam vet, and he explained his why he was involved with cannabis. And any of those men and women are on that show. Pick anyone, you'll hear this story. And so when we read the paper or you listen to the news and you hear about all these opiate overdeaths, you can tell the people that you listen to this guy, Al Burnham, and his wife, Mary Lynn Mathieu, on the radio, and they said this doesn't have to happen.
Do you think that the recreational use is helping or hurting the pharmaceutical, you know, the getting it off of, getting cannabis off of the level one?
The Schedule One?
Schedule One.
You know, the press and the feds, I mean, they unfortunately love to use the bad image, you know, the stoner kid, et cetera. But when my background in nursing, I started out med-surg nursing, but got into addictions nursing. And many of us who work in addictions who have experience with cannabis, we call it the exit drug. It literally helps people get off of alcohol, off of opiates, because it's putting you back in balance. You know, so the bad part is rather than calling it recreational use, maybe social use or something, people using it to relax, it actually is, in my understanding, a much safer alternative than having a martini in the evening. So does it help or hurt? People want to use that image, and yet it's a safe. We've had other friends saying, you know, I'd much rather be around people using cannabis. We don't have the violence we have with the other drugs. The other piece, I think, is there's a little worry about the pharmaceutical industry taking over. As Al started out when we started out this show saying that it's a plant, it's a wonderful plant. So it should be available for anyone to grow in your garden and use as a green leafy vegetable to eat, literally. The cannabinoids are in acid form when they're raw, so they're nothing's psychoactive then. It's just a good vegetable to eat. So we should be able to have that. We should be able to make our own herbal remedies or get them from an herbal store. And yes, the pharmaceutical industry should be able to come in and make drugs too. And that's probably the big problem. If people can grow their own medicine and not use all these pharmaceuticals, Big Pharma's not selling all the drugs they want to sell, and the pharmaceutical industry isn't so interested in cannabis because people could grow it and make their own. That's our big dilemma here. Big money wants to own this plant, and yet it's a wonderful plant. And one quick thing, we do have a law here in Virginia about, at least now it's just more for research, but hemp. Hemp is going to be a huge thing just in terms of products for everything. We're talking about thinking of all the hurricanes going on now. They can build hempcrete houses, stronger than concrete, mold-resistant, flood-resistant, hurricane-resistant. What a wonderful thing.
I'm going to ask you, as we wind down, again, our show on medical cannabis, Patients Out of Time is medicalcannabis.org. And Al, one more time real quick on the vet's website.
Victor Charlie, MikeAlpha.org.
Medical cannabis.
Oh, medicalcannabis.com.
Veterans
for Medical Cannabis Access. Victor, okay. Mike, Charlie, Alpha. The vets out there know what I mean.
Is Alzheimer's.
One puff is enough.
Literally in Ohio, the researchers there say you could have an inhalation a day to prevent Alzheimer's. Now, anyone with a family history of Alzheimer's, I think you want to maybe start taking an inhalation a day.
And if you believe that a family member is already showing signs of Alzheimer's, too late?
No. My best friend,
it'll help with.
I went to school with Eddie from first grade. He was my roommate in college. We went through college together. He's an Army vet. And I just heard from his sister a couple of days ago that he has Alzheimer's. And he will. Because I'll make him. He'll be using cannabis the rest of his life.
And so he'll if I think my mother is showing signs of Alzheimer's,
one puff is enough. Get us cannabis.
I should somehow come up with some joints and take to
her
for
you
Christmas.
Brownies.
You're letting her down.
No, I'd say for grandma or something, do it in an edible, but warn her. Only have a little.
The edibles
are
tough.
And you wait an hour before you decide if you need more or not.
Yeah,
that's the
biggest
danger.
This is one place, I know we're running out of time, but these edibles are tough, folks. The word titration means just take a little bit at a time. What we say is go slow and go low.
Start low, go slow.
Is that what we say? Okay. But you get the point that watch these edibles because they're very, very tough to titrate.
All right. I want to talk more about that another time. Will you come back in the future?
Sure.
All right. Patients Out of Time, Al Byrne, Marilyn Mathry. Thank you so much.
This has been the Sunday Morning Wake Up Call on 94.7, the progressive voice of Charlottesville. The Wake Up Call is brought to you by Tiger Fuel and the markets of Tiger Fuel. Production assistance and engineering from Sean McCord and Mike Friend. Be sure to join Rick next Sunday morning at 11 a.m. for the Wake Up Call, only on WPVC LP Charlottesville.